I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Do a little dance.
You have to dance along to the intro music. It's mandatory. We'll know if you don't.
Yeah. We know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Just like a little body roll.
Yeah.
Or like a little wavy dance, something like that.
Yeah, like a one-man Mexican wave.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, like the wacky inflatable flailing tube arm man.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Yeah. That's how you should dance along. Oh, dear. Anyway, Joanna, how are you?
I am full of the cold. Oh, so rubbish. I apologise if I sound rubbish. It's because I feel rubbish. But otherwise, I'm fine.
Seems like one of us has to be ill at any given point.
Yeah, do you know what? It's the time of year, I think I might start wearing a mask again. I've been ill twice in a very short space of time, and I firmly believe it's because there are loads of germs flying about and no one's wearing masks now.
Absolutely.
So I might have to get my masks back out because I am not down for this.
I might just start avoiding people again. It's for my health. Mental and physical health. Have you got any true crime chat for us?
I don't really have much in the way of true crime chat for you, I'm afraid. However, I did start listening to a new podcast, but it's more of a creepy horror kind of podcast. It's called The Battersea Poltergeist.
That's good for this time of year. Spooky, spooky.
I'm enjoying it. So I've listened to a few episodes now. It's quite interesting. This is apparently a poltergeist that occurred just near London, near Clapham Junction, or near Clapham, it was the 1960s. 1950s, 1960s, and I'd recommend it to anyone who likes that sort of thing. What about you?
In listening to a couple of different things, I got back on the Dateline NBC podcast, which I really like. They basically just do their episodes and they just take the audio file and make it into a podcast. So every now and then there'll be something that'll be like, and this was the van he was driving. But obviously you can't see it because, you know, it's a podcast and that's not how they work. But I really like them because they do like the really cheesy cliffhangers, and then they're like, and when Dateline NBC returns, you'll never believe who they arrested. You're like, there's always someone you know they're gonna arrest. Like, it's never actually that shocking.
Do you know, that's the thing that annoys me about it. It's like, one, the cliffhangers. Two, I'm like, I feel like they cover the same point multiple times when they really hammer it home.
I think that says a lot about their target market.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, I'm like, if you just went from A to B, you know, straightforward, I feel like the episode might be 10 minutes.
Yeah, but I also quite like that they use interviews, you know, they use recordings. You can see it, you know, when they arrest people, they've got the recordings from that, from the officers, little videos and things like that. So I do enjoy that kind of thing. But I think, like you're saying, because they hammer it home. See if you're doing something like cleaning the house or, you know, something that you maybe need part of your attention on other things like driving or, you know, that kind of thing. Sorry, when you're driving, you should have all of your attention on driving. Let me clarify that.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? If you can have a podcast that you maybe don't need to listen to every single word, that's probably one of the better ones. And they're usually solved. There's usually a resolution. I'd say they're quite easy listening. They're a little bit cheesy sometimes. I quite like them. Quite an easy go-to. I am not the best with investigative series, apart from The Shattered Window, which two of our friends put together. That it was amazing. Just because I sometimes don't get the chance to listen to loads of stuff in a row, and my attention span is rubbish, so then I'm trying to remember bits from the last one. So maybe I'm a little bit simple. I need it repeated again. Don't know. It's called ADHD. So I'm like, what happened last time? Who's he? Where am I? What day is it? What episode am I on?
It's called ADHD. Do you know what? It's a good point, actually, because I do find I'm the same. I find that I rewind them a lot. If I'm doing something at the same time that needs my concentration, I keep rewinding them because I'm like, oh, I've missed bits. I wasn't listening. And I hate sort of getting to the end and be like, wait, who's that? You know, what? When did that happen? So actually, it's a good shout. Dateline NBC is probably a good one to listen to when I'm doing something that, like you say, needs a little bit of my concentration. So yeah, I might pick it up again because I haven't listened to it for a while. But it is an oldie but a goodie. Tell me about your case this week. I'm excited to hear what case you're covering.
Don't know if you'll have heard it, because I hadn't heard much about it until I saw it in the news again. It is the case of Patricia Henry, aka Patty, as she was known. Her family. You heard of it at all?
Doesn't sound familiar.
I think this is actually kind of a good thing for us that you live in England, because you don't tend to see the Scottish news either. So
yes.
If things come up and then you don't see them. So I'm like, haha, I'll steal that one. Patricia Henry, who was known as Patty to those who loved her, was described by her cousin Jackie as a real character from when she was a wee girl. She loved gymnastics, music, spending time with family, and she was also a real animal lover. She loved gardening, and she also liked helping out her older neighbours with their gardens, and she kind of spent time with people on the street. She was always friendly to like the little kids that ran about on the street, and generally people just enjoyed spending time with her. She was a 46-year-old mother of one to her teenage daughter Alana. She lived in Girvan in a flat in 2017, but she was from Paisley originally.
Yeah, Paisley.
So Patty moved to Girvan in October 2017 after having had issues with her previous neighbours. Doesn't seem like there was anything too drastic. Her pets weren't getting on with their pets. There was a couple of minor disputes and someone did break a window, but it didn't seem like a super dangerous situation. I think she was just wanting a bit of a change. So she moved with the help of another neighbour of hers, 72-year-old George Metcalf, who was also known as Kenny. I think that was his middle name. And he loaned her the deposit for her new flat. So according to George, he agreed to be her guarantor for the property.
Sure.
He paid the £700 deposit and her first month's rent. He said that Patty would sort out her housing benefits and give him the money back. Patty, it's from everything that I can see, she didn't work at that point in time, so she did rely on benefits for her income. So she would have needed to obviously switch over because she had been at one property and then switch over to the other property. You've got to go through the system, and he gave her money to bridge the gap. It was her old neighbour. She lived above him previously to moving to this new flat. He went to visit Patty several times at her flat in Girvan, and he said that on one occasion, November the 11th, 2017, she got upset and she said that she wanted to go back to Gran Canaria. So she had lived in Gran Canaria previously. He said he went back the following day to drop off some cat litter for her.
So this was a friend of hers.
13th of November, Patty's landlord called George, who was the guarantor, and he had his details,
okay,
to say that he couldn't reach Patty to arrange for a cooker to be delivered to the property.
Okay, so they obviously got on well.
After the 13th of November, 2017, Patty Henry was not seen again. Patty had previously taken off and stayed in Gran Canaria for a period of time, and she'd been out of contact with family for a period of time previously, so initially no one was really concerned. There were... people have alluded to perhaps some alcohol issues and some vulnerability issues, and obviously she wasn't working, so I don't really know what the full setup was, but it sounds like, you know, she sometimes would just drop off the radar a little bit. Her daughter obviously had been living with her previously but had moved out, so she didn't have anyone living with her to kind of keep an eye on her or see what was going on. Basically, 13th of November 2017, that was the last time that anyone actually saw wow. her or had contact with her. That was November. In January of 2018, Patty's daughter Alana contacted Police Scotland to report her mother's missing, but they didn't want to record her as missing due to her history and the fact that they couldn't rule out that she'd gone to Gran Canaria again or anywhere else that was abroad. If they had checked, Patty's bank account hadn't been used and neither had her passport, but they didn't check that at the time. In March 2018, another family member approached the police and managed to convince them to register Patty as a missing person.
Okay.
Ayrshire Police appealed to the public in April for any sightings or information about Patty's whereabouts, and I do believe they described her as vulnerable at the time. Suspicion quickly fell on George Metcalf. So George Metcalf was obviously in his 70s, I think he was just about 70 at this point, he's 72 at the moment. You know, they obviously spent a lot of time together, he was back and forth, there was lots of messaging back and forward, and he was the last person seen with her. So Alana shared messages with the police that she had received from her mother in October 2017. So Patty messaged Alana saying, quote, "Kenny tried to kill me last night." So George was known as Kenny, that was his middle name.
Okay.
So "Kenny tried to kill me last night. Because I got him to decorate, he lost the plot and strangled me for ages," end quote.
Right.
Him to decorate. Alana also told police that the last time she spoke to her mum on the phone, which was after that message, she was hysterical and she could barely talk for crying. Alana stated that she visited Patty's flat on November the 15th and the 16th of 2017, but her mother wasn't home. She stated that a garden gnome that was placed at the front door had moved by the time of the second visit, so it was as though someone had been in the house. Alana also claimed that the kitchen door of the property, which she could see through the letterbox, had gone from open to closed. During this time, various family members sent messages to Patty, none of which were returned. She didn't respond to any of them, which was unusual. Alana also visited the property with George on another occasion in which she collected family photographs. She had told George not to get rid of any of her mother's belongings, but was later told by him that he'd put them in a skip without her permission. Patty also failed to contact her daughter or her mother on their respective 18th and 70th birthdays, which family said was just completely out of the ordinary. She just wouldn't have done that. So in April of 2018, the police decided to compile a proof of life report after Patty was listed as missing. They found that the last withdrawal on her bank account was on November the 13th, 2017. It was for £250 and the withdrawal was made by George Metcalf, who said he was taking the money out for Patty. Her benefits continued to be deposited into her account and her standing orders were taken as normal, but she did not touch the account at all. So it was just automatic transactions that went on. Her phone was also unused. There was no evidence of Patty being alive after November the 13th, 2017, when her last text was sent at 3 a.m. Metcalf called Patty twice on November the 14th. Both of those calls went to voicemail. In May of 2018, Alana, Patty's daughter, made a TV appeal asking the public to come forward with information. There were two sightings of Patty, but unfortunately they were both later discounted. It came to light that days after Patty was last seen alive, George Metcalf rented a van and removed a mattress and a bed from her flat. He also abruptly stopped messaging and calling her, despite being in regular contact with her prior to her disappearance. The police interviewed George Metcalf and he denied any knowledge of Patty's whereabouts. He told them that Patty owed him around £1,600 or £1,700 and that she had left him in the, quote, shit with money. He suggested that she'd done a runner and skipped town, perhaps going abroad. He maintained that they were just friends and that he had no idea where she was. On the 17th of July 2019, George Metcalf was arrested, and in February of 2020, he was officially charged with Patty's murder. Due to the pandemic, the trial was unable to commence until this year. In October of 2021, George Metcalf pled not guilty to the rape and murder of Patty, as well as defeating the ends of justice. He was also charged with rape and physical assault of two other women between 1971 and 2004, which had come out during the investigation of the police. So there was a woman who is now aged 67. She reported being assaulted and raped by Metcalf in Glenifer Braes in Paisley, Renfrewshire in 1971. The same woman, she seems to have been in a relationship with him because she said that he was also violent towards her when his dinner wasn't made or his bath wasn't run. Another woman had also told them that Metcalf raped and had been physically violent with her between 1989 and 2004. During the court trial, George Metcalf admitted in court that he had had sex with Patty, but claimed it was consensual and it happened four times in 2010 or 2011. So prosecutor Alex Prentice QC told the jurors in his closing speech that based on the evidence from witnesses, Metcalf had kind of control over Patty, not just the kind of financial side of things, because obviously he was lending her money and helping her out that way. But he said, quote, "This was an extremely vulnerable person who is someone I suggest Metcalf took advantage of. Metcalf murdered Patty and disposed of items linked to that murder to conceal and destroy evidence to avoid detection, arrest and prosecution. As we know, Patty has never been found, and on the evidence, the last person to have ever seen her is Metcalf. After their last encounter, she has never been seen or heard of since. The Crown believe that she is dead, and this is due to the circumstantial evidence heard. Patty wasn't a person with substantial means. She wasn't a millionaire, nor able to fund a life in South America. The money in her bank account was never touched beyond November 13th. On the 10th of October 2021, George Metcalf was found guilty of murdering, raping and indecently assaulting Patricia Henry after a 10-day trial. He was also convicted of attempting to defeat the ends of justice and of raping and physically assaulting the other two women. He will face a life sentence in jail. Despite extensive searches, Patty's remains have never been found. So that is the sad case of Patricia Henry.
That's do you know what? I'm glad that he got caught, and he's obviously been convicted without them having found a body, which is really good. And also it's good to hear that he's been convicted of the other crimes as well, that those women came forward and told police about their ordeals, which must be really harrowing so long after the fact.
Oh, and what was the, in 1971 one of them was, I mean, imagine carrying that about with you.
Absolutely.
Horrific. That he'd actually told a family member as well. This came out, so that's why he was done for raping her as well. It wasn't necessarily in relation to the murder, but she had told her stepmother that he had raped her previously. But because she hadn't gone to the police with it and nothing had been done with it only all came out when they were doing their investigation. Patty's stepmother came forward and said, oh, actually, she previously alleged that he had raped her. So it all kind of fell into place. I don't think he's that bright. Obviously, he managed to hide her body, and he actually got, I mean, if they hadn't reported her missing, he might never have been found out. She's just lucky that her family loved her so much.
Cared enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I wonder if they have any ideas as to how he got rid of her remains, especially she was living in a flat.
They think it was to do with the van hire.
Yeah, I was thinking that when he got rid of her mattress and bed, was
it? Yeah, they think that that's when he removed her from the property. And they've had a look at where his GPS was at that time. They searched around a bit there. They did a big search in Glenifer Braes, which is where he actually assaulted and raped one of the other women. And they thought that that could be maybe where she was. But as of yet, they've not found her. He refuses to admit anything. He won't tell them. The family have been begging because they just want somewhere to be able to go and visit her. Like, so they, obviously they want to lay her to rest, but they want somewhere where they can go and talk to her about her life and just kind of just have that peace of mind, because for all they know, I think it was her brother said she could be lying in a ditch somewhere and they just don't know. But he's only just been sentenced, so for all we know, he might come out and tell us where she is, but at the moment they don't know. I mean, it's literally kind of breaking news. It's not even available as a verdict on the Scottish Crown Office. Yeah, it's not on there yet at all. So I read the news article and wanted to look into it and share the story.
How sad.
I know. Horrible. Just the fact that she trusted him and, you know, he was going back and forward. I mean, just, he sounds like a very coercive, controlling person.
Yes.
And he has inserted himself into her life.
I was going to say that. That's clearly how he is and how he's always been. He's made her financially dependent on him, I would reckon.
He's engineered the whole thing. There's such a big age gap between them as well. Just kind of makes you uncomfortable. Not that all age gaps are wrong, but sometimes when someone's particularly vulnerable and then someone's much older than them and, you know, she wasn't really financially independent. She was on benefits for whatever reason. Yeah, there's just something about that whole dynamic has rendered her vulnerable to him, which is sad.
Definitely. Oh, one thing I do want to say actually as well is that I do have to applaud the lawyers and the courts for sentencing people without a body. Like, I think that is so good that's possible now, because, you know, what it was like before, back in the day when there was no body, there was absolutely no chance of conviction.
I think that's one of the things that's always been difficult, isn't it? Because it used to be that, yeah, that was the evidence, that was main evidence, but obviously you can't prove anything. So now they have to basically prove that someone's passed away, first of all. And thankfully that's become a lot more possible because of the technologies that we have available. The technologies that we have available to us, actually, it's one of those double-edged swords in that, you know, you're being tracked every moment of every day. Everything you do is available to so many different companies. You're being tracked for your data, you're being tracked for your personal information. And yes, it's bad, because then you get targeted advertising, and technically if someone wanted to stalk you, it'd be a lot easier. However, in instances like this, and perhaps the Sarah Everard case, you know, you've got things like GPS, you've got CCTV, there's vehicles that have CCTV. So even if you don't find the physical body of someone, you can often prove that they're no longer alive, and paint a very, very clear idea and picture of what is likely to have happened to them. And then it's just a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
I mean, based on everything, it was very clear that he was the last one seen with her. She's no longer alive. And he did it. And then basically, you know, it wasn't hard for them to find two people. I would be willing to go out on a limb and say there's absolutely no way he's only had two other victims. Just might be the fact that those are the two that they found the most credible, who maybe had other people to corroborate their stories. People like that don't just do it once. They don't just do it once. You don't just randomly decide to rape and assault people and then that's it. You've had your lot. Nah, he's done it.
Yeah.
He's done it for years. So there's no way. But the fact that they were able to find, and the strength of those women to come forward and do that, just amazing. Amazing.
I agree. So my little light-hearted story for you, the title is Manhunt After £20,000 Theft of Jammy Dodgers. So for anyone who is so unfortunate that they don't live in the UK and they don't have access to Jammy Dodgers, I feel for you, because Jammy Dodgers are incredible. They are a type of biscuit. You Americans would call it a cookie. And it's basically sort of two sort of thick kind of shortbready type biscuits. Very soft and very delectable. And they have a little love heart in the middle with jam.
Yeah.
So sort of jam sandwiched in between them, and they're very tasty and well loved in the UK. So the article says, man is wanted by police after £20,000 worth of jammy dodgers and wagon wheels were stolen from a factory. Wagon wheels are also a great biscuit base, then with marshmallow on top and covered with chocolate. Sometimes jam if you get jammy wagon wheels. Very tasty.
Got good taste. Yeah, he knows his biscuits. Back in the day, you used to get toffee wagon wheels that had a layer of like toffee caramel as well. And those were, I mean, I would pay for a time machine to go back just to have one. They were so good. So, so good.
So an early morning raid on Burton Foods in a place I can't pronounce in South Wales saw a lorry and trailer full of the tasty treats stolen. Just want to make a little aside here. So Burton Foods, or Burton Biscuits, my mum actually used to live near Burton Biscuit Factory, and the smell that would waft down was incredible. It was absolutely beautiful.
There's a biscuit factory near the Gael. I don't know, I can't remember. Is it Borders Biscuits maybe? I can't remember. But you could go and buy like the broken biscuits.
I feel like I need to know where this is immediately.
Yeah, it's Burton's. It's Burton's Biscuits as well.
Because I love a biscuit, but my Nana Shanks, is particularly partial to a Borders biscuit.
Yeah, they've got a wee shop that you can go. But it's not, you don't just like go and buy broken biscuits and you're like, oh, this is nice, I have a packet of biscuits. You're like, I have enough biscuits for everyone in my family and my extended family and my street and their extended family for the next year.
I've never been and bought the broken biscuits, to be honest.
I went with my colleagues and we struggled to walk back to the car.
Amazing. But I would absolutely do it. And I also just need to make a point that Burton Biscuits, they also make toffee pops, which are an incredible biscuit. I love toffee pops. Anyway, an early morning raid on Burton Foods in the place I can't pronounce in South Wales saw a lorry and trailer full of the tasty treats stolen. One of the suspects in the massive biscuit heist is Paul Michael Price, 37, from Liverpool, who Merseyside police are trying to track down. The raid happened on June 17th. This was back in like 2015, 2016. So this is old news, but still interesting. A 24-year-old man, also from Liverpool, has been charged with theft and is due to appear in Newport Crown Court on Thursday. So there you go.
I know, he looks more like a Freddo kind of guy.
Heroin?
Yeah, I was gonna say, maybe that's what it is. Maybe he was like coming down off a high and it really took him. I'm not being funny. He obviously doesn't know how cheap they are in the factory shop. He could have just saved himself a whole bunch of time and effort and just gone to the factory shop. But then you wouldn't have the van to drive them back in, and they are quite heavy.
To be fair, I can't really put my hand on heart and say that I wouldn't, you know, do a heist for a truck full of biscuits.
I don't know if it would be worth it for the biscuits. I'm not convinced.
I think it would be. It would depend how much time I was looking at. But I do feel if I had basically a lifetime supply of jammy dodgers and wagon wheels, I'd probably go down for that.
Yeah, but they go off.
Well, yeah. I mean, unless you found it a good way to sort of preserve them. Because, I mean, biscuits have a really long shelf life normally, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do. Like, so I used to work in an all-night bakery. And
oh, my
God. I know. And, like, for the
dangerous.
First, you think that after a few weeks, you've eaten every single thing they make and you smell it constantly. So you'll know if you've ever worked in a restaurant or whatever. The more you smell food, you kind of feel like you've eaten it. I don't know how it works,
okay,
but it does work. So it's like you're smelling food all day and you feel like you've had it, sort of. And then you just get sick of it. You get sick of it. So, yeah, the first couple of weeks, I basically just shoveled donuts and all sorts of baked goods into my face, and then after that I was just like, I am done, like I'm done with these. So I think it'd be the same. You wouldn't want to look at a jammy dodger after
maybe
that.
I feel like I might be the exception.
Can't believe he got himself in such a sticky situation. Just how the cookie crumbles.
I wonder if when he was fleeing the scene, if he got caught in a traffic jam. You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating or review. As Emma said before, people have mentioned that they're struggling to leave a review on their platform. iTunes is probably the easiest one to do, and Apple Podcasts, I should say, probably the easiest one to leave us a review for. So if you could leave us a review, that would be absolutely grand. And yes, please come back next week and join us again. If you want to reach out, you can find us on socials. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.